Hello and welcome to Off the Water, the official podcast from RYE Scotland, the governing body for sailing, windsurfing and recreational boating. I'm Philippa and I'm joined today by my fellow comms teammate Mark to introduce yet another exciting topic for the podcast.
Hello, yesterday we've got a fantastic guest with a wealth of expertise and insight into a very promising venture within the marine industry. We'll be joined by Joe Penhall-Smith of Sustainable Sailing, an innovative startup born with the aim of recycling end-of-life sails. However, as you'll find out, the venture is certainly evolving into other areas of the marine industry.
Definitely. It was really interesting to sit down with Joe and hear more about the company, their aim and the road to getting there. And important to mention, he's actually on this journey with his brother, Sam.
Absolutely. I'm certainly looking forward to hearing some of the innovative ideas and finding solutions to some difficult issues we face across the boating sector.
Absolutely.
So let's dive in.
Hi, Joe, and welcome to Off the Water. Thank you very much for joining us today. It's going to be great to find out a little bit more about sustainable sailing, of course, but maybe a good place to start would be putting that all into context by finding out a little bit about yourself. So if you wouldn't mind maybe giving us a little bit of an insight into your own sailing background, that might be a perfect way to kick things off.
Thank you very much for having me. So I'm Joe Penhall-Smith. I grew up sailing, grew up about 10 minutes walk away from the local reservoir back near Derby, Stourton Harold Reservoir. Sustainable sailing is founded between me and my brother. And we both kind of grew up walking down to the local sailing club and going racing. And it was a really good generation of us. We kind of came through Staunton at the time. So a lot of us kind of went off and kind of did things like lasers and 420s and a lot of the kind of pathway stuff. And yeah, then I kind of moved up to Oban and to go and do a master's and a PhD, having kind of done a undergrad in marine biology and oceanography, largely because I was really interested in biotech. And I went for an interview at SAMS, at the Scottish Association for Marine Science, as part of the kind of hunt for master's programs, and went, oh my god, this place is gorgeous, right, okay, I'm staying here then if I can, please, thank you. So then I ended up doing the kind of Scottish Keelboat Academy and the kind of associated sailing a lot with boats like Trastada and Animal and the kind of RC35s and the kind of slightly bigger boat stuff. All in all, not a terrible racing career over the years, but definitely not to the same level that Sam, my co-founder, and my brother and co-founder, kind of went to, where he's very much in the kind of professional sailing world.
No, wonderful. And thank you very much for that insight. It's nice just to build up that picture. And yeah, you've touched on a few key points there, I suppose. Obviously, firstly, wonderful to hear that you loved it when you made your way up to Oban, obviously with the scenery and different things, a very nice place to be. But obviously education, a key point in building what's become sustainable sailing, with your insight there and that scientific background, and then obviously a family affair as well with your brother Sam. Do you feel that your separate knowledge bases have merged quite nicely? You know, you bringing that scientific background and obviously Sam with his sailing boat building. Do you think that they've meshed quite well?
Yeah, definitely. I think I'm surprised actually at how quickly, obviously, I'd left to go to Scotland about the same time that he left to go down to the south coast to start boat building, which was the best part of 10 years ago now. And when we kind of started talking about sustainable sailing a couple of years ago, I was surprised at how differently actually our approaches to answering the problem had become over the years. Because, I mean, like, we were seeing each other every couple of months at least. But to go from that kind of much more engineering focus from Sam, and that kind of much more practical, this is mechanically how this is going to need to work, compared to my slightly more kind of airy-fairy, slightly more of, theoretical. Oh yeah, but like, what's possible? Where are the technological limits versus where are the actual theoretical chemistry or theoretical biology limits? It's worked really nicely as a kind of someone who has quite a kind of different background in terms of professional experience, but also we've obviously known each other for 27 years at this point, so we get on really well, and it's really straightforward to kind of talk to each other and kind of build a business after that.
Absolutely. Well, no, pleased to hear that all worked well when you two decided to come together and start on this venture. So I suppose then, for someone who's maybe not overly familiar with sustainable sailing, you obviously mentioned that the problem there that you guys had sort of different approaches to. Could you give us a little bit of a take on what that problem is and what sustainable sailing set out to do in the first place, I suppose?
Yeah, definitely. So we started out at a relatively kind of niche problem, which was that a lot of professional race teams, kind of RC44s, SLGP, or America's Cup teams, use a lot of sails in a year. And these are all high-grade carbon fiber composite sails. So they're hugely expensive to manufacture, hugely expensive to buy, to put on a boat. And in a lot of cases, they weren't necessarily lasting more than a handful of events. These were sails that were then going into storage and going into containers. And that seemed like a massive waste, quite honestly. So Sam came back from the last America's Cup, basically having transported a large quantity of sails out to Auckland and then back again, and was very aware that they were likely to sit initially in a container. And that seemed like a massive waste for something that thousands of pounds have been spent on each sail, large quantities of carbon fiber. But it turns out, as we start kind of doing a bit of digging, understanding the kind of technical, the kind of technological side of that problem, what can we do with those sails at their end of life? That somewhere around 2,000 tons of sails in a year come offline globally. And it's not just carbon fiber sails, there's obviously large quantities of Dacron sails and Mylar sails from things like windsurfing, or nylon from spinnakers and power kites. This is suddenly an enormous quantity of plastic, which it doesn't really have any kind of potential solution. So from our kind of perspective, this was a real kind of opportunity, because actually 2,000 tons is a not insignificant volume of kind of textile, your kind of classical textiles, but also your more kind of high grade composite sails. But conveniently, if you have a solution which is able to manage all those sails, then you actually have a solution for woven woven fabrics, such as clothing, for example, or even chemically speaking, plastic bottles, other sources of large volume plastics. And if you can have a solution for sails at the opposite end of the spectrum, for your carbon fiber composite sails, you've actually got to develop a solution which is appropriate for solid composite structures. So boat hulls, for example, or on a kind of much larger scale, wind turbines. 92% of wind turbine may be recyclable, but unfortunately, a large chunk of the remaining 8% is composites. So if we can develop a solution for sails, we've actually got a really applicable solution to a whole range of other different problems. So we've been running with that recently.
Wonderful. No, I think some of those statistics that you mentioned there as well, was it 2,000 tons of sails? It will shock people. You know, I think people will recognise when you dive into the subject, oh, I can see why there is a problem here that needs to be solved. But when you actually give them it in that context, it'll make people, you know, step back and go, wow. And it's interesting you talking there about obviously having a niche problem to begin with. But then when you mention all those different types of sails that you're having to contend with, it becomes very diverse very quickly. So the problem almost becomes a little bit bigger in what you're trying to solve and finding a very innovative solution to that, I guess. Has it been interesting sort of bursting into the industry, I guess? How has it been like, you know, chatting to other people that are maybe doing not the same thing, but, you know, are in the same space? How's that been?
It's really interesting because, of course, as sailors, we're all kind of very aware that we're ultimately reliant on the wind and the local environment. And we're all kind of deep in our heart of hearts want to kind of continue sailing and continue sailing in beautiful places for as long as possible. And the kind of balancing act against that seems to be quite interesting has been the just how chemically and biologically and technically complex a lot of these subjects are, as you say. Once you start unpicking it, everything quite rapidly spirals into a whole range of other challenges and a whole range of other kind of alternative solutions and alternative approaches. So it's been really interesting because we're coming at it from a much more chemical engineering and kind of biotech and that kind of slightly more academic approach, alongside Sam's engineering and marine industry experience. because we've got the option to draw on both sets of experience, it's been a much more kind of, it's been a much more interesting challenge to, from our perspective, compared to obviously organizations like Clean Sailors have programs like Resale, which are around recutting and repurposing sales, and brilliant programs, but very much marine industry solutions to marine industry problems, which doesn't necessarily account for the slightly kind of the slightly panic inducing spiral of complexity of when you start actually unpicking it going, oh god, this is so much bigger than I originally anticipated. So that's been really interesting.
Totally. I think spiral of complexity, that's a good phrase, you know, that diversity within what it is you're trying to unpick, for sure. And so I suppose then, looking at how sustainable sailing has evolved from its inception, and obviously talking about sail recycling, how has that offer changed as time's gone on? Obviously, you mentioned there the challenge of boat hulls, and obviously I know you guys do a bit around foils as well. How has that come on in time?
I think it's the kind of classic, I was about to say the classic circular economy solution is if we have a circular economy solution already. But the transition from seeing it as one problem with one solution to, as you kind of say, the chlorofoils is the kind of the other side to that. If we can instead think about the whole thing as this very circular pathway, this very circular lifetime of an entity, so from its production all the way through to its kind of use and end of life, and then our ability to close that loop and put that stuff back into the beginning of the process, that's changed quite dramatically since we started. Obviously, we started out, we just needed a solution for large quantities of carbon fibre sales, or then we just needed a large solution for carbon fibre and Dacron sales, or Dacron and carbon and nylon. And actually, the ability to then start putting that back into the system and start thinking about, oh, actually, we're building some kind of other products that are mostly bio-based. So they're using different biologically synthesized equivalents to resins. I mean, they are chemically speaking identical to the resin, but they've come from plants rather than from oil. And our ability to then close that loop and go, actually, this bio-based solution thing is really quite effective and really quite useful. And can we actually potentially use some of that technology to put it to go back into the start of that system again? So our rudder stocks, for example, are all made using recycled carbon from the kind of previous, often from the previous batch of sails that we just recycled. And having different options to close that loop and think about it as a much more circular system has definitely been quite a big kind of development.
Fantastic. No, it's nice to sort of build that picture and understand what that development and evolutions look like, and obviously lots of exciting things to keep coming and keep building on as well. Am I right in saying you've got some interns on board now as well to maybe take on some different sorts of projects and diversify what it is you're really working with yet again? Can you tell us a little bit about what they might be up to?
We do indeed. I mean, they started a couple of hours ago at this point, so I'm sure they can work out, they'll end up working out what exactly their projects end up looking like fairly soon, in that classic complexity spiral kind of routine. They've now had the full introduction to everything we're currently looking at. But the big thing that we're hoping these guys will help us out with are around legislative changes that we know are coming in. So legislation around it's called extended producer responsibility is being introduced in the EU back end of this year, beginning of next year, basically around who's responsible for your, in this case, sale, but who's responsible for your plastic or your textile more generally. Because, of course, we can't necessarily expect every individual to go away, build their own sustainable t-shirt recycling company to then put it back into the system, to close the loop, to do all these kind of to do all these really kind of quite technical and complex and really involved processes about this massively complex ecosystem of different industries. So at that point, this is legislation that will, depending on how it pans out, is likely to put the responsibility for the end of life of your t-shirt, your sail, your potentially your boat, onto the person who produced it, the company that produced it in the first place. So for example, if I went to North Sales and bought a sale from Europe, then at the end of life, based on the extended responsibility legislation, EPR, then what would potentially happen is that actually North Sales would have had to have been put aside some money to manage a solution for that sale at its end of life. And quite what that looks like and quite how that works is what this intern is going to be looking at and how it kind of pans out. Because it's EU driven, a lot of it's down to national governments to implement. And so it's going to be quite an interesting challenge. So yeah, ultimately, where does the responsibility lie in developing end-of-life solutions for things which are chemically really complex, and we can't necessarily expect even local council, for example, to have very straightforward solutions
Wow, that's really interesting, actually, in terms of that legislation and the look to the future and how that might be changing. And no, it'll be really cool, I'm sure, for some new faces to be getting stuck into projects like this. And is it nice from your perspective as well to be working with different people, new faces? And I know you've got a lot of partnership working that feeds into everything you do. Does that play a big part? And, you know, really coming together with different people and building and sharing that knowledge base. I don't know if you could talk us through some of your partners and who you've worked with in the past and going forward.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, partly we're a very small startup, so we kind of need to collaborate with people to survive. But also, we're really aware that it dramatically improves the quality of the work that we're all doing, because everyone's good at different things, right? Everyone's good at subtly different variations. I may know about chemical engineering, for example, but Sam knows about proper engineering. But then one of our collaborators over at the University of Edinburgh, Dr. Joanna Sadler, does things with kind of synthetic biology that I can't see with a telescope. And picking all these different pieces of expertise, these different diverse experiences, and putting them all together in a room has been absolutely amazing in terms of the kind of outcomes, which is very much a blatantly stole from the Scottish Association for Marine Science. And we have a tendency to put large quantities of people who often have not necessarily that obviously meshing experiences and expertise into projects together, with the expectation that actually, just because I know a lot about oceanographic modelling doesn't necessarily mean that this isn't particularly helpful for large scale algal cultivation, for example. You end up some really interesting, really unusual collaborative enterprises and collaborative projects. And so we've definitely stolen that approach to work with organisations like the University of Edinburgh, the University of Sheffield, Nottingham, and as well as the kind of wider Catapult kind of ecosystem. So everything from the kind of composites at the AMRC and the kind of more purist engineering at the MTC. So yes, we have an awful lot of collaborators at this point, and I'm never going to do justice by naming all of them. They mostly know who they are. I hope they know who that we think they're brilliant. So yes.
Wonderful. And no, I'm sure working with such a range of partners as well, they'll all bring something different to the table. So no, really interesting to hear you reeling a few of them off. And I know it'll be really cool, I'm sure, for them all to be a part of a project like yours. And you mentioned Edinburgh there, and obviously Oban at the beginning, a few Scottish links in there, and obviously mentioning there too that you are a startup. And am I right in thinking that you maybe received your Startup of the Year award up in Glasgow? Do you feel like Scotland has played its own part in your journey in a way?
I mean, inevitably, of course, particularly having lived in Oban for 5 years, I can't really escape it anymore. So yes, the Institute of Engineering and Technology Startup of the Year Award back end of last year was awarded in the Science Museum in Glasgow, which is a brilliant venue for an awards dinner, and alone just somewhere to kind of around. So yeah, we can't really escape Scotland, particularly not for the kind of more biotech focused and more kind of high grade complex chemical engineering kind of world. See, we are ultimately the plastics recycling company on some level, and the kind of Scottish ecosystem for biotech particularly is absolutely amazing, and we wouldn't want to escape that even if we could.
Brilliant. Well, no, that's obviously nice for us to hear as well. And yeah, you know, award ceremonies, different opportunities to get out face to face and chat with people, I guess, and tell people about what it is you're doing, what your goals are, the problem it is that you're fighting. Has it been nice to be able to have that opportunity as well? I know you've attended various boat shows abroad as well, but recently the RYA Dinghy and Water Sports Show. Is it nice to get feet on the ground somewhere and be able to actually have an audience and go, look, here's the problem, this is what we're doing. You might not have known about this before, but now you do. Is it quite nice to see that process and maybe the penny dropping for people?
Yeah, definitely. And I think RYA Scotland is obviously kind of one of the kind of classic examples of that actually from the kind of thing, like things like the Coaches Connected and the kind of conferences and stuff like that, where actually physically standing face to face with someone and kind of being able to effectively look them in the eye and say, this is a massive problem. And then to kind of, as you say, see that penny drop, but also see that level of like, oh, actually, I have an answer for that. Or you want to talk to my mate Dave, or the kind of that level of just like actual people who have actual kind of firsthand experience of a lot of these things is so much more effective than trying to solve things by remote and kind of just send a couple of emails and have a couple of Teams meetings.
Definitely. No, it's always nice to have that sort of element worked into things, isn't it? And no, I feel like slowly but surely, is it nice to be seeing that penny drop, as we talked about just there, for people and feel like progress is being made? I know this morning, just on your social media, I noticed you'd shared something positive about super yachts maybe taking on board some more notions of sustainability and trying to work those into their practices. Do you feel like in terms of that wider landscape, you are starting to see positive actions being taken?
Yeah, definitely. And it's inevitably quite a slow burn, and it's quite a slow kind of build. And we've kind of been doing this kind of stuff now for the last couple of years. And interestingly, technologically, we're rapidly outstripping the kind of people side of a lot of sustainability, which has its own kind of benefits and its own kind of disadvantages. But a lot more people are now starting to talk about it. A lot more people are starting to think about it. And there is so much more we can do, and there's so many more kind of potential solutions. And so now the real kind of, it's not necessarily a case of if, it's absolutely a case of when. And it's just kind of the more we can get the word out, the more we can do the more we can do kind of things to build that conversation, help bring people in to take those kind of small practical actions that you don't even necessarily think about on a kind of day-to-day basis, absolutely the better.
Absolutely. And I'm sure a lot of the time it is that sort of education piece as well, not only letting people know what the problem is, but telling them what those smaller practical actions maybe are. In terms of a sort of call to action and where you guys within sustainable sailing sit in that, if someone has got old sails, what should they do? What sort of actions should they take?
Exactly. The kind of classic, you need to do a little bit. If everyone did a little bit, then we wouldn't have to do a huge, one person wouldn't have to do an enormous amount. So particularly from our kind of perspective, kind of asking about things like end of life sails, from this kind of starting point, drop us an email. So we're now hiring bins, particularly to marinas and sailing clubs. So perfect opportunity to get together as a sailing club and hire a couple of bins, and all of you can drop all those sails that have been sitting in your shed for the last 5 years, 10 years, longer than you necessarily like to admit. Drop it into the bin, we'll pick it up, and that can go and be recycled. And that's a very nominal fee to cover our transport and basically nothing else. So yeah, you can obviously hire a bin, but also on a kind of wider level, there are a couple of different pieces of survey out there at the minute. So the Green Blue are running a end of life equipment survey. We'll be running something not a million miles dissimilar fairly soon. And World Sailing Trust have got some other stuff going on around their equipment recycling hub. Chatting to these people, sending them information about, oh, I've got this amount of stuff in my shed, for example. Even that level of data makes our lives so much easier, because we can actually tailor solutions to your challenges rather than, I think this is probably about right, because the math says that there should be this much stuff here. Ultimately, that is a particular is quite a blunt solution to a very complex problem. Whereas, we've got as a sailing club, we've got together and we're going to hire a couple of bins because we want to do a clear out of our members' sheds. I've got X amount of stuff in my shed. My mate's got something else in their shed, so on and so forth. That kind of information is gold dust and allows us to actually help you as an individual sailor.
Totally, I know, and I think lots of people will be glad to find out, you know, what steps they can take. And yeah, to see that tangible difference in these actions being taken off the back of work that you're putting in, when you step back and you look at that impact, would rewarding be the right word to use? What sort of emotion comes to mind when you actually think about the difference, you know, that you're making now and here and in this space, but also longer term and looking to the future?
I mean, rewarding certainly one word. Absolutely terrifying is probably another one. It's really exciting. This is absolutely that kind of very tangible, that tangible impact on really quite complex, technologies. This was ultimately why I got into science, particularly in the first place. Is that kind of making a real, actually being able to see the difference you're kind of making in the world.
No, brilliant. And thank you. I do appreciate that very honest insight there, because, yeah, I'm sure it is scary to sort of take that plunge, obviously, initially back when, you know, you came together with your brother and went, look, are we actually going to do this, and how's this going to pan out? And, you know, it's a brave thing to do, but I think it's pretty inspirational to see the sort of motive that goes behind it and, you know, wanting to do something good for ultimately the planet and tackling this problem, which we now know a little bit more about. Thank you for that. And yeah, I suppose reflecting on the journey so far, lots of exciting things to come, I'm absolutely certain. But are there any sort of challenges that stand out as moments in that journey that you can look back on and go, oh, look, we're proud of ourselves, we managed to overcome that one? Or has it all been a very sort of natural progression?
Yeah, I think obviously, in terms of standout moments, the IET Startup of the Year Award was a really kind of big high point in the Science Museum. Oh my God, people think we're actually doing something that's not only is it stuff that we think is really interesting and exciting, but actually other people seem to think this as well. So that was absolutely brilliant. I think actually from a kind of deeply personal perspective, The biggest high points for us have been about three quarters of the way through a couple of different research projects, where you kind of get stuck in the nitty gritty, the kind of fine details, this isn't working particularly well, some piece of equipment's down, we've not got enough of whatever this, we've got too much of something else. And actually it's been those moments where we've kind of collectively sat down with between ourselves and between our collaborators and actually kind of mapped out, oh my God, what have we done? Hang on a minute, this almost works. Oh God, this works really well. And having that moment of kind of particularly a large group of people with very kind of different, very different kind of backgrounds, but also very different levels of experience, suddenly all getting excited about the same thing, has been absolutely one of my kind of highlights.
Definitely. No, it must be nice to be able to reflect on those high moments as well. And I suppose in a way, maybe channel that into momentum going forwards. You've got an exciting period still to come. I know lots of cool things in the pipeline. I don't know what insight you're allowed to give us at the moment as to everything that's to come in the next wee while. But yeah, what might that look like for you guys?
We're now scaling up a very small company into something which is potentially going to be quite large and quite helpful to a lot of people. There's kind of a limited amount that we're allowed to necessarily share about specific projects and specific programs of kind of development. But a lot of the kind of stuff that we can see coming down the pipeline in terms of particularly kind of legislation and particularly along the kind of technical development side, the next 18 months particularly, we're going to look back on and go, oh my God, that went in wildly different kind of ways than we expected. And particularly this will be a much more applicable solution to not just things like manufacturing waste for sail makers, but actually things that you could potentially, as a sailor in deepest, darkest Torridon, for example, might actually find useful as well, which isn't often so often the kind of case that you develop a solution for one end of the industry, and actually it isn't necessarily that helpful for if you're not necessarily in one of the kind of hub areas or not. So yeah, so the potential change around that, around building these kind of much more universal systems, much more accessible systems, is going to be really exciting.
Definitely, no, lots of exciting things to come, I'm sure. And I'm sure as well that a lot of our listeners who have gained an insight today from obviously your words will probably want to find out more going forwards. And if people were to want to head online and find out more about your journey, sustainable sailing as a whole, and keep up to date with things that are coming in the pipeline, where can they go?
Absolutely everywhere at this point. You can join our mailing list on our website. There's obviously our Facebook page, Instagram, Twitter. We do have a YouTube channel. We don't really use it a huge amount. But in all these circumstances, go onto the website and just click on the links. Click on the links to all our social media at the bottom, or just search sustainable sailing on your chosen media platform of choice. It'll be fantastic to hear from you and see you all.
Perfect. And boiling it down to that one previous question as well, of if someone has some old sails in their garage and they would like to get in touch, what is your email address?
So the contact email for all sail bins is info@sustainablesailing.co.uk, and put in the subject line bins.
Perfect. Well, no, thank you so much for that. And thank you so, so much for that wonderful insight. I feel like I've learned a little something today. I hope others have too. And yeah, I'll definitely be keeping my eyes peeled for what's to come going forwards. But no, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, that was a very inspirational listen. Joe's enthusiasm to find solutions across a breadth of issues really makes you think about current practice and how we need to evolve in a more circular way.
Yes, definitely. Really, really interesting to hear about how what sounds like a fairly niche aim to begin with can grow and grow and become a really diverse issue to tackle, especially with Joe's statistics putting that matter into context.
It really makes you realise how necessary the work both Joe and Sam and the growing range of partners has become to avoid future problems, I suppose, with our materials and resources across the boating industry.
Totally, and really nice as well to get that tangible understanding beyond all the science and engineering as to how you can take the right steps should you have some old sails lying around.
So check out the links in the description for more on sustainable sailing, and do keep an eye out. It sounds like there's a lot more to come. Of course, it's not only about businesses finding solutions to problems, and we'll be launching a plan this summer to inspire action on a more practical level and get more of our community to sign up to the Green Blue Pledge. There'll be a link in the show notes for the pledge. We also hope to go further and boldly go on a few adventures to clean up our coasts this summer.
Yes, sounds like there's lots of exciting things in the pipeline. And so finally, we realise that soon we will be getting back on the water for the summer, and always welcome your feedback. If you have enjoyed this podcast and some of our others, then please do share them with your friends and communities. Until next time.
Bye.